The following talk was recorded at Libra Planet 2023, Charting the Course, an annual conference on current issues in ethics, social justice, and technology from the Free Software Foundation. Libra Planet is a live conference, and speakers often use slides and other visual tools to assist their presentation. You can see the videos of these talks at media.libraplanet.org or on the FSF PeerTube channel. Libra Planet speakers do not represent the mission of the Free Software Foundation. We host speakers talking about their uses of free software in different kinds of political and commercial work. The FSF supports their freedom, but does not take a position on any political issues other than those necessary to uphold the principles of free software. Like all the FSF's work on behalf of the freedom of all computer users, Libra Planet is made possible by thousands of individuals. To keep our work going, please consider becoming an associate member via my.fsf.org/join. or by making a donation at my.fsf.org/donate. You can stay informed by subscribing to our newsletter, The Free Software Supporter, at fsf.org/fss. For more information on Libra Planet, please visit libraplanet.org/conference.
All right, welcome to Libra Planet in person again. I'm gonna be talking about three demos, a collaborative visual calculus system. I'll get into what that is. I'll do an intro, get into three demos, do some technical architecture, how this project was put together, and then I'm gonna share some general thoughts on free software in higher education, and then some future directions on where this project could go. So my name is Nick Nybe. I'm a software developer at Columbia University's Center for Teaching and Learning. I love working with graphics. I have a background in startups in all sorts of industries. And I have worked on the GNU LibreJS project in the past. And you can reach me at nicholas@gnu.org. A bit about where I'm coming from. I work at this department called the Center for Teaching and Learning at Columbia University. We aim to design technology in a meaningful way for the classroom. When putting together technology, it's easy to put something together that follows the trends of the industry just because that's what other people are doing, but rather we aim to think deeply about what we're building and why. And we work with domain experts, generally Columbia faculty. So what is three demos? this project started to solve some problems. It was put together by this math professor named Drew Youngren at Columbia. He, this style of, in pedagogy, this is called a learning intervention, and he had some goals here. The goal is to foster small group debate and really focus on the logical reasoning on how you come to an answer, right? The answer in question, the answer itself may not be so important as the process of getting there and students teaching each other. So those were some of the aims for this project. The development timeline, it actually started as a hobby programming project by Drew Youngren in 2020. And then my department was brought in last summer to make it ready for the classroom, add a bunch of new features, and we'll get into all that. To give you an idea of what this project looks like, I think of it as a 3D graphing calculator that didn't exist yet. We have a number of object primitives in here, all used to illustrate concepts in multivariable calculus, which is really the domain here. This project can be used in a multi-user sort of shared environment. Here you can see three clients connected on one system, but you can imagine this happening in a lecture hall with the instructor at the front of the classroom. And this is really the key piece that makes this stand out from all the other 3D plotting, technology out there. And there's all sorts of things out there, but Drew Youngren imagined this tool and to do this specifically. And students can use this from home or act as the instructor themselves. And to give you an idea of how this project works, this is, in this screenshot, it's really just one object primitive. This is a function graph object, and displaying its integral. So every object type in this system has really bespoke functionality to display different features or, like tangents and integrals, for example. Here's another example of that, a parametric surface with tangents, tangent vectors, and a normal vector. You can mouse over to change where that pinpoint is, et cetera. And here's a level surface and a tangent plane. Similarly, you can just move this around to illustrate the concepts. One unique thing about this project is that you can use the T variable to animate arbitrary parameters. Here's a vector object, and it's a still scene, but you can imagine how it cycles through, you know, the different states between 0 to 1. You can control all that and do some interesting things like that. We have a number of works in progress that we're working on here. Interactive poll system, similar to this tool called Poll Everywhere, which Drew is using in the classroom, but we want to make our own version tightly integrated with three demos with some basic poll types like multiple choice and numeric polls, but also like more tighter integration with the objects themselves. So you can imagine a poll asking students to pinpoint certain spots on an object or select different objects themselves and displaying those aggregate views. We have UI redesign in progress just to clean some things up here. And one interesting feature we have planned is the story mode, which is just pre-populated lessons that are interactive with a bunch of expository text and different objects preloaded into the system. And this is going to be much more fleshed out through the summer. Drew's just going to be adding all these scenarios to story mode. So we can look at the technical architecture of how this is put together. Could be interesting for anyone who wants to use it or extend it. So the main piece of this project is really the web client. We make heavy use of 3.js to render the graphics, which are all constructed through math objects created through math.js. And we use the, you know, a standard mix of JavaScript and HTML. The caveat that it does happen to use this kind of newer JavaScript framework called Svelte, but whatever you're familiar with, it's pretty straightforward. Another component to this project that we were even debating at the beginning whether this was necessary or not is the central server. And it is sort of an optional component in that you can use the project, just the client offline by itself, but if you do want to get that multi-user functionality, we decided that to facilitate that communication over WebSockets, we did need to have a central server running somewhere. So we put something together in Django Channels and Django's asynchronous web server, Daphne. We are not using a standard database. We do use Redis a bit for to store some of that persistent scene data to load things as students enter the scene. Some motivations for why we put it together this way, like why is this even a web application from the get-go? It's really just easy to distribute to students. They just open up a web browser and are able to start working with Drew. Just the fact that this stuff is possible in the web now, we have WebGL and WebAssembly, so the limits of what you can do on the web are a lot different than they were 15 years ago. And another goal, I suppose, would just be accessibility. Now, these sort of intense graphical applications on the web sort of fly in the face of the semantic web philosophy of, you know, that web is primarily a text-based medium. But I think there is room for both kinds of applications, and accessibility can mean more than just, is it usable with the screen reader? Are all sorts of, you know, abilities which someone may or may not have, and so we did aim to make this as accessible as possible with multiple ways of doing the same thing with a keyboard and mouse, et cetera. I mentioned MathML here because this is a standard for rendering math in the browser. We had some complications actually getting this working, but this is the direction that, you know, we do want to go in. It is in general good to rely on standards like this because it, you know, we have higher confidence that accessibility tools someone may be using is compatible. Some just general challenges we've run into. Interesting one that I didn't expect was just input validation with Math.js. Now, everything we put together in the scene in 3.js, in three demos, is constructed in these elaborate algorithms, and that math, those math parameters, that math expression, maybe evaluated sort of like in the middle of constructing these objects. And so the right way to do validation here is really, we had to write our custom validator for sort of each object type, because it really is specific on, context specific on what expression you're trying to alter here. There are different variables and different expressions, and it's not just a matter of is it syntactically correct. It really depends on the object's context and what really you're trying to do. And in general, learning curves, I mean, everyone on this project is new in some way to either the domain or the technology we're working with. So, you know, which is exciting, but of course, you know, that's always a challenge. And another challenge is just time. You know, we do have other projects going on with other faculty members and other responsibilities. So that's just a general challenge we're dealing with. But this project has been a lot of fun to work on. So now I'm going to take a step back and just talk a bit about free software in higher education from my perspective, because I've been here 9 years. I just have some thoughts. So when a faculty member comes to us with an idea, they are generally really interested in the long-term sustainability of the project, okay? Like, who wouldn't be? We have countless examples of projects like this we've developed with faculty, which we still maintain. Logic Learner is a interactive predicate logic learning tool for computer science. Thomas Scroll, we put together interactive economic scenarios with him, which we're currently building extensions for. Locust, Tempest, and MediaThread are both very interesting projects which are used across departments and domains, and have MediaThread's been around for 11 years or at least, and Locust Tempest is getting there. Now, I also want to set the stage sort of like academia is an interesting place with all these different stakeholders. We're all here for different reasons with different ideals. We have the faculty, the deans, the provost, the trustees, and who are sometimes forgotten are the students. And in general, I just see that within this multifaceted community, there are unrealized opportunities for free software. And I sort of want to contrast, you know, this environment with, you can contrast it with the industry, namely the software or tech industry. And you know, the software industry obviously can move much quicker than academia in some ways, but we also have to remember that any industry exists for a specific purpose, and that is to make money. It's an economic engine. So, you know, when you think about things like ethics or human rights, these more, you know, deeper questions, you know, that industry may happen to abide by certain ethical principles, but it's always a supplementary concern, and we've seen it like over and over again. It's not really a surprise. Wherever corners can be cut, you know, industry will step in and cut those corners. And so I just propose that industry may not be the only place for free software to really start and thrive in new ways. We have the luxury of not competing with the industry directly in education. Free software will always exist. Industry trends can come and go, but by design, free software has protections in place to, make sure it survives into the future, because it was designed with the future in mind, in the purest sense of the word. When you think of free software, you may not always think of the most cutting-edge technology. You think that the industry has some leg up on us, but it's in fact designed with the future in mind in a different, more meaningful way, right? So my perspective is that somewhere in the maze of politics that is academia, there are other motivations and end goals in play, and I don't claim to have any solutions here yet. It is complex, but I just encourage everyone in this room in general to think about what sustainable free technology could look like in university education context, sustained through university funding, grant funding, like whatever that looks like. There are possibilities. And yeah, of course, universities are, they have to make a lot of money to survive. And where I'm from, Columbia, this is, it's money oriented for sure. But there are also higher purposes in education, like sharing human knowledge. So my vision is that I would like to see more collaboration across universities. My department, we collaborate with Stanford a bit. They use some of our applications, and we're working with accessibility on some of these things with them. It is generally hard to find, real time to do that. I don't see this space really thriving from my perspective, but there is a lot of unrealized possibility there. And I also believe that in education, you can make things that aren't possible elsewhere because of the unique environment and the goals of promoting learning and sharing knowledge. And university's community supports values like creativity and access. We can find new ways to cultivate those values. Some future directions for this project. That was kind of abrupt there. But anyways, we are planning more like interactivity between the components on the feature side, and then more animation functionality. I see future collaboration between my department and Drew Youngren, absolutely. And for outside interest, this is still a very new project, but one of the reasons I'm talking here is just to let people know about what we're doing. And I'm gonna leave these links up here. If you're curious, you can access the live environment at 3demos.ctl.columbia.edu. The links to the source code are within the application, or you can look it up on GitHub at ccnmtl/3demos. We can do questions and answers. Thank you.
I'll start with a question from IRC.
Cool.
Is this in any way similar to Simscape?
I've not heard of Simscape.
Neither have I, but...
Okay. Good question.
Just relaying the
question. It sounds like something we'll have to look up. Okay.
Okay, so if there are any more questions, please come up to Mike and ask it.
Which licenses are used for JavaScript in general? Is it the GPL, or is that the 3demos? What licenses is it under? And the other JS libraries?
Sure. 3demos is licensed under the GPL version 3. It's typical for JavaScript libraries to be licensed under generally the MIT license these days. Everything we make at the Center for Teaching and Learning is licensed under the GPL.
Hi, great talk, and I'm interested in the project. I went to the demo site, but I was having trouble. the intro here says that there's a story mode, and then you can click a TOC.
That is in progress. Everyone working on this, we're really like deep in the code, and so we can't, you know, actually we need a project, more project management on this project. But yeah, we're having, not everything is polished as it should be. So there is like, in fact, a story mode in the code that's just like set to not active right now. But yeah, in the next few weeks that will be active, but that's why for the confusion, yeah.
First of all, thanks for the presentation. I feel very privileged to be closing in on 60, not having had the opportunity to go to college when I was your age. Online makes all this stuff work. And so I just have a comment about technology in higher education and just a sort of an encouragement. So first of all, calculus nearly killed me. So anybody who studies calculus and loves it, boy oh boy. So I always smiled every time I was in my community college online, and I would go to the site to do all the calculus work, and about every fourth time it would pop up a note saying my operating system, and it would list the distribution that I was running was not supported. And I had an opportunity to ignore that and go on. So I would just like to encourage folks to think about stuff like that and advocate for free software by simply being more open. Write that, and I did, I wrote them several times and said, you know, that's not good. I'm your student, I'm paying for this course. I am not going to use Windows or Mac OS. I'm going to be using a GNU Linux distribution. That little pop-up that you got there just means that you haven't done a good job, really, is what it means. And so I think that that's what I'd really like to say, is just encourage that. I think universities and higher education need to be open to folks, especially folks who are running GNU Linux distributions. Thank you.
I completely agree, and personally, I think they should be more open to folks that maybe don't want to use a smartphone for doing basic things. And so, yeah, these expectations we have, but we need to change the norms here, and like, where else can we change them but a university? So,
one thing I was interested in, you mentioned that Central Server is optional to running the application.
Right.
I was wondering if I was interested in running it locally without the Central Server, how does that look?
It basically looks like just serving a basic web server on your system, just tied to the JavaScript code. Like currently, to get that working, you would have to do a bit of like hacking yourself. It's like the code is there. We don't have like official steps to do that, but it is just because it's not really our high priority right now. But it's absolutely possible. It's just like a basic front end app, and just means the WebSockets code will fail when you try and do that. So yeah, you'll have to. It'll be like a DIY process, but it's, you know, if you're in the code, you should be able to sort it out. But yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Beautiful work. Thank you for the talk. So three demos is browser-based. Are the majority of projects built by CTL browser-based, or what other platforms are popular?
Yes, absolutely. We have a host of 20 to 30 Django applications with varying levels of JavaScript interactivity. We have 15 years ago, I think we developed like a heart monitor system in Java, but since we tend to work on various projects, we try to keep it as simple as possible in what we have to learn as developers. So, you know, if it can be done in a Django application, we will do it then, just so future developers won't have to learn, you know, new frameworks, et cetera. So we do make an attempt to consolidate things while also keeping semi-current with what is the state of the art, which is a challenge. But yeah, in general, we work with web apps, but that's not really set in stone. There's no reason why we couldn't work with, you know, we have developed basic, you know, phone apps before, for example. But we don't really focus on the technology. There's no real reason for them to be web apps. It's convenient. It can integrate with our CourseWorks, LMS system, Canvas, So there's some integration possibilities on the web which we make use of, and depending on what the project is doing. So.
Thank you.
Would you give some examples of the context-specific input validation?
Yeah, so let's see here. I don't know if I can zoom in, but maybe a better example here. Right, so just, you know, considering this string here at the, you know, the fx function here, defining what that points to, you know, that string, you know, as soon as the user changes that input value, we want to possibly update the scene, possibly make a, you know, red fail notice on that validation, on that input. And so, just for example, like, what if I typed in, like, a bunch of random characters? Those characters may be, you know, they may be the sign function, or they may be a variable that's defined in that context. You know, it may be defined on the left side of the expression. So it's just, it's really specific on what input parameter you're dealing with. And yeah, it was just some challenges there that I didn't expect. I thought, oh, this would be basic. And I put together a solution that did work. It just didn't work in the best way at first, where I just caught every exception that the Math.js evaluate function threw. It's just, we were doing a bit more work than necessary sometimes. Sometimes we wouldn't catch that the input was wrong until, you know, a lot of work had been done to get to that final evaluation step. Parsing is one thing, but then, you know, actually evaluating it, it may parse correctly, but evaluate incorrectly. So that's basically, in a nutshell, what was going on.
Another question from IRC. Mm-hmm. Are there any plans to move away from GitHub to Savannah, I think they said?
Savannah, GitLab, that's absolutely a possibility in the future. I mean, sure, like my department currently, we are on GitHub. And you know, I would like to see us move to GitLab. I wasn't aware of the possibilities of moving. I guess I sort of assumed Savannah was just for GNU projects. But yeah, I definitely would like to at some point. I don't like relying on GitHub, but we do our best not to rely on it too much. We have our own internal Git system. We have it all backed up, and it's tied to our continuous integration flow. So we're not really tied to GitHub. It's just like, it's the convenience thing that everyone knows right now. But yeah, I see GitLab in the future as like a sustainable possibility. But Savannah's an interesting idea too.
Since you mentioned free and open source software specifically within academia, mm-hmm. I'm wondering if there's any effort that you know of at Columbia to just make a list of all the open source coming out of Columbia. And I bring this up because I work at Harvard and I've been making such a list, and we have about 140 or so projects, and it'd be fun to like link to have like a web ring or whatever, you know, let's all link to each other's lists of projects.
I totally agree. I think we had in the works a portfolio project for specifically my department where we tied together all these various things we've made. Even before we were the Center for Teaching and Learning, we were the Center for New Media Teaching and Learning, which is really cutting edge technology stuff in the .com era. So we have roots like way back in like 1999, projects we've worked on when not everyone had internet even back then. So yeah, that is something that, you know, we should do. But again, it's just like, what do we, like, we have projects going on with deadlines to meet. It's like, yeah, actually carving out that time is a great goal to have. So, but yeah, thanks for the reminder. And I like the idea of, you know, having an old school web ring. So,
yeah. Sure.
Okay, so if there are no more questions, let's thank the speaker again.
Thank you.